Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What would you say if I told you there's a book that can teach you how to win The Bachelor?
What would you say if I told you producers caught multiple finalists reading that book in this season that's currently airing?
What would you say if I told you the producers don't want anyone to know that their show has been compromised?
How do we know all this? We wrote that book.
I'm Lizzie Pace.
And I'm Chad Colchin.
We're the authors of How to Win the Bachelor and the hosts of the Game of Roses podcast, a bi-weekly podcast where we break down all the biggest plays, errors, and MVPs in the game of reality television.
Listen to Game of Roses wherever you get your podcasts and go to howtowinthebachelor.com to get our book.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello everyone, Kathy here. A quick message before our 200th episode, Aliens versus Thelma and Louise extravaganza. Every month over on the Cinemile High Club, which is our Patreon, we give a big chunk of our income to charity. So far we've donated to Action for Children, Choose Love, the Trussell Trust, London Irish Centre, Beauty Banks, Crisis, Birmingham and Solihull Women's Aid, Refuge and Stand Up to Racism UK. And for July, we're actually going to give 100% of our Patreon income to Childhood Trust. They're an incredible charity who support vulnerable children living in poverty in London. And they've just launched a really wonderful drive in response to the COVID crisis and the impact it's having on children. Basically, what they're doing is they're match funding 94 brilliant charities that are collectively aiming to raise over £3 million to support 100,000 children across London. So these 94 projects run by the charities will provide loving care, hot meals, fun activities, recreation, mentoring, and many more brilliant activities and opportunities this summer for children who are really in need. So if you sign up to our Patreon before the end of June, 100% of your first month's subscription will go to this wonderful charity. You'll also get access to a huge back catalogue of retro movie watches and a ton of TV reviews too. And there's no obligation to stick around, so you can cancel anytime you want. So basically what you can do is donate to a wonderful charity, get loads of bonus podcast stuff, and then cancel anytime you please. It's basically a win-win. If you want to read more about the Patreon or the charity, head over to patreon.com/thecinemile and hope you enjoy the 200th special. Bye.
Hi, it's Dave here. This is my wife, Kathy.
Hello.
This is The Cinemile. It's the podcast where we used to walk home from the movies. And it's our 200th episode. We've been walking home from the movies for nearly 200 episodes and then not walking home from the movies for however long lockdown has
been. We've been not walking home from the movies for about 10 episodes.
Yeah. And it's weird, but hey, here we are.
Here we are.
We've done 200 of these Cinemile episodes.
We have.
So thank you, a huge thank you to all of you for going on this journey with us and taking so many walks with us.
Everyone, we started this podcast just over 4 years ago now and we love every minute of it. It makes us very happy. It's kept us sane.
I don't love every minute of it. Sometimes you tell me I'm mansplaining and I don't really understand what I've done wrong. I'm learning.
We love our podcast. And do you know what? When you're married or you're with someone for a long time and then you've kids together and then you go into lockdown together, it's really helpful to have like a fun project to take your mind off things.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend having a podcast.
Well, it's like the old saying goes, those who podcast together stay together.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
And we had like all sorts of fantastic plans a while ago for our 200th episode. Like we were going to try and do a live show. We were going to do lots of fun things. Obviously, none of that's happening now because it's lockdown.
Well, there's no... You can't have guests. You can't have an audience. You can't go anywhere.
And there's no new movies out.
So we just thought, like, let's just do what we did for 150th.
Yes.
Because that was really fun and you guys all liked it a lot.
What we did for 150th was I made Dave watch a movie that I love that he'd never seen. And then Dave made me watch a movie that he loved that I'd never seen. Worked out really well. People loved it so much that it in fact inspired what we ended up doing when we launched our Patreon last year, where we every month watch retro movies.
Yeah, because we got such great feedback about yeah. that and everyone wanted more of it. So we were like, all right, we'll do more of that.
And here we are 50 episodes later.
And so we have again chosen each a movie that we've been trying to get the other one to watch for years and they haven't.
And I have often tried to get Dave to watch Thelma and Louise. And he's not been up for it. And that's fair enough, because we always like have to have a consensus around what we're watching. But I only found out last week when we were watching League of Their Own for our Patreon, and it came up because Gina Davis is in it. I actually only found out a week ago that Dave has not ever seen
it. Yeah, you didn't know I'd never seen it.
Like, I naturally presumed that you'd seen Thelma and Louise. Never. Like, absolute cinematic classic.
So here's what I know about Thelma and Louise.
And no spoilers. If you know something spoilery, don't say it.
Well, I do know how it ends because
Well, don't say that.
I won't
though.
Say it. Okay. But the
Oh, that's a shame. But that's the problem when you haven't seen a classic. Like, you always know the ending.
But often, because classics permeate pop culture to the point where they get referenced 1,000 times.
Yeah.
So this is a piece of this is a movie that I feel like I know a lot about, probably because of The Simpsons, and I think that happens. That's happened to me so many times as I've grown older, where I've experienced a piece of pop culture after The Simpsons, after I've experienced The Simpsons parodying it, if you get me.
Yeah.
So like The Shining, I saw The Simpsons episode of The Shining before I saw The Shining.
It's happened to me a lot with The Simpsons as well, for sure. But we're not here to talk about The Simpsons. We're here to watch Thelma & Louise. We're really excited. We're going to have a bottle of wine. We are going to have takeaway. Just ordered a pad thai and some Thai red curry. Pretty thrilling stuff.
I love sharing what we're ordering and with people, don't you?
And for dessert, this is like as good as it gets in lockdown.
Is it the Mars Bar?
It's Mars Bar's ice creams. Yeah.
Did you pick that? You picked them up special for this.
I picked them up special. There's four in a box, so let's just I'm having at least two.
And who says this is not the kind of celebration we were expecting? There's Mars ice creams, people. 200 episodes, we get Mars ice
cream. There's Mars ice cream, there's Thelma & Louise, and there's Deliveroo. So how bad? Right, we'll see you on the other side.
This is going to be the most low-key big podcast celebration.
You know, we were even
created.
Thinking of like maybe we'd try and do like an Instagram live or something, and then I was like, frankly, I couldn't be fucking arsed. Lockdown has me like that. But what we're gonna do after the movie is, because I've picked this one, I'm gonna blow Dave's mind with a series of fun facts about Thelma & Louise.
Yeah,
so get ready.
And then we should also say that there are two parts to this episode. So there's a part, there's a episode 200 A and B, so which are both live right. Well, perhaps they're both live right now. So once you've listened to this and you've rewatched Thelma & Louise, you can also go to our feed, and I am making Kathy watch Aliens at last.
And let's tell everyone where you can go and watch Thelma & Louise if, like us, you didn't know, and we did a bit of digging. We rented it through YouTube.
Amazon.
Sorry.
Amazon.
I blew that.
We've rented it through Amazon.
Rented it through Amazon.
I couldn't find it. Doesn't seem to be available to stream anywhere. So that's why we're watching
that's
it.
Good.
All right,
okay.
So we'll see you guys in 2 hours and a bit, it seems.
Bye.
Thelma.
I'll get it!
Thelma, have I told you I can't stand it when you holler in the morning?
I'm sorry, doll. I just didn't want you to be late.
Hey, how you doing, little housewife?
Louise.
Yeah, I still have to ask Daryl if I can go.
You mean you haven't asked him yet? Thelma,
is he your husband or your father?
Thelma and Louise are going fishing.
How come Daryl let you go?
Because I didn't ask him.
He's gonna kill you!
I left him a note.
Thelma and Louise are going to catch hell.
I'll have a wild turkey straight up and a Coke back, please.
Thelma!
Oh, what? Tell me something. Is this my vacation or isn't it?
His butt.
Thelma, have you lost your mind?
Woo!
I'm Investigator Hal Slocum, Arkansas State Police.
You get your butt back here, Thelma, now.
As you know, we've tapped your phone.
What?
Maybe you got a few too many parking tickets?
Thelma what happened.
Hi, we're back. You're hearing the sound of an ice cream van, which we're not partaking.
We want to get ice creams, but it feels inappropriate to like eat ice creams whilst podcasting, so we're going to leave it. It's the next day. The movie was awesome, but quite long. And this is where our premise of our podcast comes in handy, right? Because when you're walking home from the cinema, you can just record about the movie. But when you're at home and you've just turned the movie off, you kind of want to go to sleep and not record a podcast.
I would say we kind of have to go to sleep because we have so little sleep.
Yeah, because we got a new baby.
Maximum sleep. Also, our podcast is about being out and walking, and so that's what we're going to try and continue to do.
Yes.
In the face of pandemics and whatnot. So, we watched Thelma & Louise. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Firstly,
I'm so glad.
Spoilers for Thelma & Louise. 1992's Thelma & Louise.
Yeah, usually we do a spoiler-free bit and then we move into spoilers, but I think on a movie this old, it's okay.
I think let's just spoil it.
And so are you pleased we watched it?
I'm so pleased. I thought it was it's a cracking movie. It's firstly, like, right, so it starts and it says a Ridley Scott film, and then I'm like, oh yeah, do the Germans have a word for a fact that you know but had completely forgotten about?
I'm sure
they
have it.
And then you don't remember till it's prompted.
Faktenschreude.
Yeah, well, I got Faktenschreuded when I was like, oh my god, yeah, it's a Ridley Scott movie. And then I was like, whoa, if I'd gone one alien back in my suggestion, we'd have been doing a Ridley Scott doubleheader.
Yeah.
But no, we're doing James Cameron's Aliens, now available when you finish this one. So, yeah, it's a Ridley Scott movie. It's a gorgeous looking movie. It's just like, this is, it's like a Western, I think. It's like, it's all, you know, it's the great American frontier sort of vibe. There's like canyons and desert trails and like dirty saloons and like nasty characters. So it, and for me, the movie, well, first of all, like, Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon are just sensational. Like, roles of a lifetime for both those women. It might be, like, the best Gina Davis role I've ever seen. And I think, and that's coming off the back of A League of Their Own, which was thoroughly enjoyable. But she's got a lot more to do in this movie.
She's got a lot more personality in this movie. There's also only effectively two leads. Whereas in A League of Their Own, it's a really strong ensemble, and she shares scenes with a lot of people.
Yeah, and this movie is not afraid to let its leads do the work. Like, Ridley Scott's one of those directors who's not he's actually not a very showy director, and he's not flashy, and he's not really an auteur either, do you know? And I mean, maybe people would disagree with me, but he's not like a Tim Burton or a Wes Anderson, or where it's like the,
you know, the second you turned on a movie.
Yeah, it's like he kind of works best when he's got good material, because there are bad Ridley Scott movies as well. Let's not forget, there are bad Ridley Scott movies in amongst even the Alien franchise, I would say.
Ooh.
Such as what about that Russell Crowe and Leonardo DiCaprio one, which is pretty bad.
What was that?
I can't remember the name of it. It was so bad. It was like a spy thing. Anyway, he's just such a confident, director, and so this is movie just like has momentum, and it's just like powered forward by these two performances and this sort of crime road trip that they end up on, which is just it's a horrifying and wonderful series of events, and it's entertaining. This, like, above all, this movie is a fun watch, but it's also like, and I'm sure, like, things, this has been picked apart in 28 years since it was released, and people have said this better than I will, but like, it's clearly works as like a metaphor for like the feminist movement, or like it's at the beginning of this movie, you've got two women, one in particular who's basically in a what seems like a borderline domestic abusive situation. It is at the very least a mentally abusive situation. She's trapped in a horrible marriage, which she has to like ask permission to go anywhere. That's where we start. And even Susan Sarandon's character, Louise, when shit starts to go down after they've murdered that dude,
they can't escape that destiny themselves. She needs to be wired money from Jimmy. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're basically two women in a world that's dominated by men. You know, like, it all kickstarts because of a man. Because a man in a bar tries to sexually assault Thelma outside of...
And he tries to rape her.
He tries to rape.
And it's a very explicit scene as well. I'd forgotten how explicit that
scene was. It's disturbing. And that's the moment, that's the catalyst for them taking their destiny into their own hands. When Louise decides to take that shot, not out of self-defense, that's kind of crucial, but because enough is enough. And this movie is about them escaping this trap, this world that they live in, which is dominated by men. And I would say a movie that's dominated by the worst type of man, like some to the point where some of these men are like caricatures, like the guy driving the truck is like, he's absurdly
he is to an extent
disgusting.
A caricature, but I've met loads of guys like that.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's not possible, but the movie's making a point by like, what's the worst possible
man? Oh yeah, the movie becomes like,
you could
it's like that, if you were to imagine that you were on a crime spree, and who are the people you'd like to be, you know, crime spreeing against? And in this case, that's the guy some any woman would want to blow up his tankard. And it's like almost cartoonish when that happens, but it's like really satisfying. And it's interesting you say, like, obviously it's like a hugely feminist movie, and when it came out in 1991, it was like they were on the cover of Time magazine, and everyone was like, this is going to change everything in the industry, and this is the year of the woman, 1991 was called, and partially because of this movie. But funnily, it really changed nothing. It was a really successful movie with two female leads that, for lots of different reasons, there's like a feminist reading of it, including the fact that it's about female friendship. It's not about, like, it's not about either of them finding romance. For example, there's like...
it's actually about them escaping the trappings of romance.
It is, and it's specifically like a buddy outlaw, like, road movie, and they're like, they're male tropes, right? All of those. So that's really interesting that it's about two women in that situation. It's got that, like, kind of great American dream, like, you know, the Grand Canyons and the scenery and all of that. It feels so American, which is interesting because obviously Ridley Scott's English. And obviously it's written by a woman, so Callie Corey wrote it.
Who won the Oscar that year?
Yeah, she won the Oscar.
Like, so well deserved. Like, the screenplay is what drives this whole thing.
But it's interesting, because, like, you know, the word feminist can be often bandied around as like a negative word, even though all it really means is like equal rights for men and women. So basically, while it's open to feminist interpretation, and like all over the world people have talked about the feminism, Callie Corey actually said that it's like, it's a story about outlaws, and that's how she saw it, which is really interesting. And again, like, why should she bear the burden of all this feminist discussion? Because she wrote this one movie. And Gina Davis felt similarly. It's like, no, it's about these two women. We're not speaking for all women when we make this movie. And a lot of the criticism was like, oh, this is anti-men, this is glorifying violence. Like, well, you don't say it's glorifying violence when it's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Like, that's not a complaint levied at them, so why is it levied at this film? So it's really interesting, the conversations around it. And like, I agree with you on this being such a lovely script. Like, there's so much, like, the very first time we meet them and Louise as friends, it's just a phone call where, like, Louise works in a diner and she phones Thelma, and Thelma's at home. And they're just... I just immediately felt like they were real friends. Like, it felt like two women talking. It was written by a woman, the dialogue. They're just having a laugh. Like, she's saying, do you want to come on a fishing trip with me? And Thelma's like, I don't know how to fish. And then it's like, well, Daryl knows how to fish, so it mustn't be that hard. So immediately you see how they see her husband, like, that he's a complete idiot, basically. And I enjoyed everything in the setup. And, like, Louise is very maternal to Thelma, which is, like, I think in a lot of female friendships, you might have one friend who, like, you just feel like is really looking after the other one. And I felt like that throughout this movie. And then there's some stuff that I really liked, like little things, like, they're very interested in how they look, which is, like, as lots of women are. So, like, there's a lot of scenes of them, like, fluffing up their hair and, like, there's that scene where Louise is like putting on lipstick when she's in the desert, even though they're like being chased by the police, and then she fucks the lipstick away because she realises it's ridiculous. And then I love that throughout the movie Gina Davis is like drinking from these tiny little bottles of booze. Like this weird kind of thing that like an old lady might do.
And pointedly refuses to buy the better value bigger bottle.
Yeah, I just thought there were so many nice little touches. And then obviously we mentioned the fact that there's quite early on a scene where Gina Davis's character Thelma is dancing with a guy in a bar, and as she says, she's like dancing with him cheek to cheek all night, and then she's in a car park and he tries to rape her, and it is a really, really distressing scene. And Louise comes out with a gun, gets him off her, they start walking away, and then he says, "Suck my you know what," and Louise turns around and just shoots him dead. And it's like kind of a horrifying moment. It's really shocking because he has stopped, right? So to Louise's point, they couldn't claim it was defence. But at the same time, you do feel like he's done this before and he'll do this again. You feel like it's very much deserved on his end.
It feels like, weirdly, it feels like justice.
Oh yeah, it's totally just.
And it's outlaw justice, isn't
but he
it?
Exactly. So they're outlaws, and like he would have done it if she hadn't interrupted. Like that was very clear from the scene, and then we kind of learn throughout the course of the film that Louise herself had been, we're presuming rape, but we're not quite told. Like something really bad happened to her when she lived in Texas, and it really like resonates. Like you know the singer-songwriter Tori Amos. She wrote a song called Me and a Gun, which is a really, really harrowing song about when she was raped, and she actually apparently wrote it off the back of watching this movie. So I can imagine it like incredibly triggering and like resonating for lots of women who watched it. And I feel like that moment when she had shot him was just an individual's act in a movie, but is like very symbolic as well. There's so much going on in this film, and then it's just so much fun. Like all the scenes when they like, we've got Thelma, who is very sweet and like almost naive and like very fun loving. She like meets Brad Pitt, and she fancies him so much. And obviously, it's Brad Pitt's breakout role.
Naturally,
and I was reading up on it, and Gina Davis like was responsible for him being cast, because she said when she auditioned with him, she was actually like fluffing up her lines because she was so attracted to him.
Yeah,
she's like, we have to cast him. He was paid $6,000 for this.
Really?
And he's like the absolute breakout star as JD. Funnily, Brad Pitt auditioned like 5 times for the role, didn't get it. So obviously they were like interviewing.
Sorry, audition for what role? And didn't get it.
JD, the Brad Pitt role. George Clooney auditioned for it.
Oh, George Clooney auditioned.
Obviously. It's funny now though, because I hadn't seen this movie in a while, and last time I watched it, I was obviously younger, and I really fancied Brad Pitt. But now watching it, I felt a bit like a lech, and I didn't really fancy him because he just looked really young. Like it felt a bit wrong, and he's so skinny. He's almost got like this skinniness of like a boy who's about to turn into.
But it feels
it just
like
felt really lechy watching it.
It's an interesting sort of development for the story, introducing his character, because it comes at a point. Like I would say the point of the movie is for Thelma and Louise to go literally from point A to point B in terms of
because it's
on
a road
the way
movie.
To Mexico in a road movie, but their characters are going from oppressed housewife and waitress to.
I don't get the feeling Louise is ever repressed.
Outlaws. Well, she kind of is. She lives within the confines of the society.
Of the patriarchal society.
She's
the,
kind of ready to break free.
But then I love that Gina Davis is the one in the end who like kind of goes mad. Like Gina Davis will just sit down in scenes and like start laughing maniacally, and like it's just brilliant. Like
she's the one. Yeah, I like the way the position of the balance of power between Thelma and Louise changes, and their relationship to each other changes as the movie goes on, and as they react to each situation. So when they murder the guy, Gina Davis retreats and into herself.
Well, also because she's just suffered this horrible attack.
Naturally, but
her friend, like I'd be pretty pissed off if I was with a friend who just like killed someone, and then suddenly I was on like a crime spree.
No. I'm not saying anything they do is not understandable.
No,
I'm just saying
agreeing
it's
with
interesting.
You.
And while that's how she reacts to that, whereas Louise is like all about action, but doesn't know what to do. She just keeps saying, "We need to make a plan."
Yeah.
But and is kind of driving things forward, without knowing where to go. And then this sort of balance of power between them shifts, where suddenly Gina Davis gets, kind of as soon as Brad Pitt comes along, she begins to get a lust for life and for him.
They basically say, she says, like, I finally know what sex is all about.
Yeah.
And her husband, Daryl, she had been with him since she was like 12 or something.
So it's kind of like her being liberated, and then suddenly she goes even a bit further than Louise would at that point by robbing the store. Do you know?
Do you think it's really interesting the way, like, do you think it's really interesting the way, sorry, we're trying to maneuver a buggy here as we talk. The way, so Susan Sarandon, like, granted Michael Mann brings her the money, but it is her money. She just asked him Michael Madsen. She just asked him to send her the money. But then, like, knowing that Brad Pitt's like a robber,
well, that's just
leaves
stupid
it on the bedside table.
If saving more and spending less is one of your top goals for 2023, why are you still paying insane amounts of money every month for your phone bill? Right now, when you switch to Mint Mobile, you'll get their unlimited plan for 50% off. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you order from home and save a ton with phone plans starting at just $15 a month. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Cut your wireless bill to 15 bucks a month at mintmobile.com/save. That's mintmobile.com/save. Hurry. Offer ends January 15th.
No, but she's so naive. Like, she's only ever had one boyfriend. And, like, she's just had, like, the first and only good, like, lay of her life. So she's, like, obviously, like, totally enamored by this guy. She wouldn't even for a second think he'd rob her. But then when he does, it completely changes her and she becomes really badass. Because I think it's, like, enough is enough. Like, now a man has stolen my money and that was our only route out of here. And I love when she goes and... she uses his lines and goes and like sticks up the petrol station.
Yeah,
but she's so good.
It's brilliant. But also it's like to the point of like their character dynamics shifting. So, you know, you said that Louise is the maternal one and kind of is for a lot of the movie the one shepherding Thelma, and Thelma feels like she needs to be dragged along. But those, at that point in the movie, those roles switch. And after they've been robbed, Louise sits at the end of the bed and puts her head in her hands and says, what are we going to do? I don't know what to do. That was my life savings. It's gone. And then it's Thelma who suddenly, she takes the driving seat then, I guess, literally
yeah, I
and
that.
Metaphorically.
She picks her up.
And then she's like, I know what to do, and just goes and robs the place.
She's so
Also in a very comical way. You know, she uses verbatim what Brad Pitt said.
It's very stylishly done because it cuts from Gina Davis and cuts to the security footage of her doing it, and all the men are sitting around the table, like her husband Daryl and Harvey Keitel, the FBI agent, and Stephen Tobolowsky, the FBI agent, and they're all watching it. And it makes it funnier that we watch it through their eyes, because Daryl's like, huh? Like, this is his, like,
yeah,
compliant housewife that he's used to acting in one way, and she's like completely different. And I just, there's so much humor in it. Like, I love when Susan says to her, look, you need to phone Daryl, phone home and see if he's acting funny, because if he is, it probably means they're onto us. So Thelma phones Daryl and Daryl goes, hey sweetie, how are you? And she just hangs up because she's like, yeah, the police are there. It's just so,
it's
like, the humour is so good in the script. And I do feel like it was a bit of a change for Ridley Scott, who, like, if you look at something like Alien, it's like, you know, he makes very serious movies. So, like, I think at the time he was very well received for having, like, done something more comedic. So yeah, I think, like, there's just so much going on. It is, you can see why it's such a classic, why it won the Oscar, why everyone's obsessed. And like, even
yeah, I get it
now, like, Gina Davis, I love her, I'm obsessed with Gina Davis. She has the Gina Davis Institute, where she examines, like, gender in media, specifically because when she had kids she was noticing something that we notice all the time, which is when you're watching a kids TV show, right, when there's, well, more often than not, there's male protagonists, but specifically, like, the side characters tend to all be male, or characters that, like, don't need to have a gender are always by default male. And she started, she actually, like, invested money in this institute and started actually analysing, got teams to analyse the data for movies. So even if, when they looked at the original Frozen movie, while there's two female leads, most of the words spoken in the movie were actually by men, because all the side characters were male. And you, like, we were watching Finding Dory recently, or Finding Nemo, sorry, and we were like, all the fish were boys. Like there was just, there's no reason for it other than it's just this weird gender bias that exists. And the Gina Davis Institute does all that kind of research, and what they needed was data, so they just mined data from all these movies. And there's a documentary called This Changes Everything, and it's about, like, it's about Hollywood in general and how, you know, at one point, like, in the silent movie era, there was a lot of female directors. And when it moved into the talkies, as they say, no one's quite clear on why, and maybe I've just missed it, but like it became more and more male-dominated. And this documentary, This Changes Everything, is put together by the Gina Davis Institute. And they say, like, that, you know, when Thelma and Louise came out, everyone's like, this changes everything. From now on, women are going to rule Hollywood. No. There's, like, multiple examples in this documentary of, like, women
Wonder
who,
Woman, This Changes Everything.
Yeah, who did, like, these amazing jobs. Like, women who were, like...
The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Catherine Bigelow.
Exactly. And, like, there's examples of women who make these huge movies that are so successful and they can never get work again. And it's just because they're women. So I really recommend you guys check out This Changes Everything. But yeah, Gina Davis is awesome and I love this movie. And now I've got lots of facts on it. Do you want to talk about them?
Oh, yes, please.
This is the fun fact section of
I'm just so happy that I don't have to do this. So we do these, we do retro movie reviews over on our Patreon page at our bonus podcast, The Cinemile High Club, at patreon.com/thecinemile. And I'm usually the one who puts together a load of production and fun facts about the movie, but Kathy did it for this one, so thank
I also did it for League of Their Own because it makes sense for the person who knows the movie better to
do
it.
Fair.
And particularly, like, if someone's not seen the movie, you're not going to make them research all the facts before they've seen it, which would kind of kill the buzz. So it received 6 Academy Award nominations, 1 Best Original Screenplay. Scott was nominated for Best Director, and both Sarandon and Davis were nominated for Best Actress, which is really unusual in the same movie. Usually one would be Best Supporting, usually want to be Best Actress.
Well, it's a very much an equal billing, isn't it?
It is.
It's a
Callie
double
Corey,
hitter.
The film screenwriter, who, bonus fun fact, is the woman who created Nashville, which for a long time was a TV show I really loved.
It just
went a bit off the rails, but I love season one. Basically, she talks about the ending, and she says,
I love the ending.
I love the ending. And she's saying for her, it's them flying away out of this world and into the mass unconscious. Women who are completely free from all the shackles that restrain them and have no place in this world. The world is not big enough to support them. We didn't really talk about the ending enough. It is wonderful. It's that, like,
it's perfect.
Moment they embrace and then they just go. Because there's nothing left for them to do. Like, they have been basically driven out of this world by, like, this, like... 100 cops around them, and Harvey Keitel's kind of the lone person going, they're not dangerous. And like, I really like that Harvey Keitel was on their side, but like, they've been completely hounded by all these men out of this world, and I just love that ending of them flying
away. It's beautiful in how many, like they're in a situation where there is no escape because this world that they inhabit and a lot of women inhabit is completely inescapable and domineering. Like, they are oppressed to the degree where there is literally nowhere to turn, but they still just find a way out of it, and they invent their own way
and
out.
And I love that the movie
and that's
ended
just literally by escaping the world. And how unusual to have the death of your two lead characters be a sort of triumphant and empowering moment.
But that's because it froze with them in the air.
Yeah.
Apparently there was an alternate ending where they like fell down.
And the car explodes.
And then
Harvey Keitel comes out and just like, uh-oh. Just,
I love the almost like magical realism of that ending of them just like flying away.
Pitch perfect.
It feels visually at odds with the rest of the movie because it's like, you know, it's cartoonish the way it happens, but I love that ending.
No, I love it. It's them soaring. It's really beautiful.
And then some of the kind of some facts on like around how it was perceived at the time. It was accused of everything from promoting casual sex, shocker, to promoting casual misandry, which is kind of the male
version.
Misandry is like the male version of misogyny. But it's basically, like, at the time was very controversial. Like, lots of people were very against this movie.
Like, if misandry was rife in society, then maybe I'd be like, this is just hammering home.
Well, that's what all the incels think, though.
Men being disgusting.
But that's what all the incels
snobs.
Think. Like, they wear t-shirts saying it's okay to be a man because they think the whole world is out against them.
But like, if you look at every other movie that was released in 1991 or 1992. and how many of them start heroic men.
Oh yeah, it's like, and I don't even have like the box office numbers here, but this wasn't like in any way the big box office hit of the year or anything like that. It caused more of like a stir culturally than it made at the box office.
Yeah.
So it was Kali Curry's first screenplay, which is pretty cool.
What?
Yeah. She spent 6 months writing in 1988 while producing rock videos for artists like Alice Cooper. By the way, a lot of these facts come from Mental Floss. Mental Floss. Thank you for sustaining our facts over here. She also wrote Something to Talk About. I haven't seen that. And Divine Sisters of the Divine Secrets of the Sisterhood, which I have seen. Then she had doubts about Ridley Scott directing.
Why?
I think maybe she wanted a female director, but don't quote me on that. But he basically pointed out, but like, how much he believes in strong women and the fact that he had like cast Sigourney Weaver in Alien, when like that's a role that would traditionally have gone to a man. I told you this one already. George Clooney auditioned 5 times to play JD. And then he said when he watched Brad Pitt, he was like, yeah, Brad Pitt was amazing. So Brad Pitt earned $6,000 for his work in the film, and just 5 years later he earned $10 million for his work in Sleepers. So that's pretty amazing. And he has credited this as like the role that gave him his career. And Brad Pitt said that like he just reckons they were really desperate and he was in the right time in the right place. And he speaks in kind of a high-pitched voice in the movie. And he said it's because he was so nervous. Like he said he was just absolutely bricking it, especially to work with Ridley Scott and Gina Davis. Because like they were huge, like... And basically, as I said, Gina Davis said that like she thought he was so cute. And when they said who should we cast, she said the blonde one, duh. And she, while she did have a body double in the movie, she opted to shoot her sex scene with Pitt directly, which we said during it. I said, I bet she's used a body double, and then we watch it. We were like, no, she's not, and who could blame her? So Daryl. The husband who plays Gina Davis's husband.
Oh my
husband.
God, he's amazing.
They were engaged.
What's
in
that
real
actor's
life?
Name? You don't have that, do you?
I do. Christopher McDonald.
Oh, Christopher McDonald. What? He's one of those that guys.
He's in a lot of stuff. But they were engaged in real life before this film.
Him and Gina Davis.
Yeah, before she met Jeff Goldblum on the set of Transylvania 65,000. Never heard of it.
Wait, but she'd met Jeff Goldblum in The Fly many years earlier.
Well, maybe they met in Transylvania 65,000 even earlier than The Fly.
Sorry, what's Transylvania 65,000? What number is 65,000, Kathy?
It's there, look. 6-5,000.
Oh, okay, that's not correct.
And MacDonald, who had since married, described the experience of acting with her as cathartic. And she was game as well. So they're quite happy to work with each other's exes. He gained 36 pounds to play Daryl. And then when the movie came out, 2 girls recognised him on the street and one told the other one she should shoot him.
Well, that's not funny,
but like in jest, I think. Holly Hunter, Frances McDormand, Jodie Foster, Michelle Pfeiffer, Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn were all considered for Thelma and Louise.
Whoa, give me that list again.
Holly Hunter, Frances McDormand, Jodie Foster, Michelle Pfeiffer, Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn.
And one more time and really slowly.
No, I'm not doing it again.
There's some really really good choices in there.
Of course. I mean, like, it's an amazing movie.
Were they paired up?
No, I don't think it had got to that stage yet.
All right, let's cast it from that list.
At one point, Ridley Scott was signed up as producer, and Foster...
You're like, no, I have no time for this.
Foster and Pfeiffer were attached, and at the time, Michelle Pfeiffer actually said to him, why don't you direct it? Like, it hadn't really crossed his mind to do it.
Jodie Foster could have directed this.
Ridley Scott wanted Streep and Goldie Hawn, and Streep wanted either Thelma or Louise to survive the movie. She didn't want one of them to die.
Streep and Goldie Hawn... That could work. Goldie
Streep
Hawn.
And Goldie Hawn are in another movie together.
So Streep as Louise and Goldie Hawn as Thelma.
The problem is they've done such a good job in this movie that you could never picture someone else playing the roles. Like it's one of those performances.
They were also in Death Becomes Her together.
Yeah, they've been on screen together. Gina Davis. Oh wait, no, the Banger Sisters might have been Susan Sarandon and Goldie Hawn. Right, I'm mixing them up. Gina Davis wanted to play Louise, not Thelma. Davis's agency called Ridley Scott every week for a year to get Davis in a room with the director so she could convince him to let her play Louise. Then she met Susan Sarandon. Pretty much the second Susan walked into the room, I was, are you kidding that I could play Louise? Susan was so self-possessed, so centered and together. The actors weren't always sober. Upon Sarandon's request to do some method acting, Davis admits that for the roadhouse scene, we asked the prop guy, do you have any real tequila? Because it's easier to act if we taste alcohol.
Method act.
I love that. And Michael Madsen has also said that him and Pitt smoked a few joints during filming. Harvey Keitel stole some of Stephen Tobolowsky's lines. That seems a bit lousy.
Stole his lines.
Because we'd seen Stephen Tobolowsky in the credits, but then we were like, God, he didn't do much. Well, now we know why. Harvey Keitel stole scenes from
And
him.
He was ahead of Brad Pitt in the credits. That's got to be the only time Stephen Tobolowsky, as much as I love him, is going to get ahead of Brad Pitt.
And the Grand Canyon scene was actually shot in Utah. Most of the film was shot around California. Susan Sarandon insisted that the ending not change. Thelma and Louise drive off a cliff at the end of Corey's original script. Sarandon told Ridley Scott that she didn't want that to change. Scott responded that while Louise would definitely die, she might shove Thelma out of the Thunderbird in the last second. Glad that didn't happen. We haven't discussed how iconic the car was.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
What is it? A Chevrolet Thunder.
It says Thunderbird here in my notes. And that's the end of the fun fact section.
It's awesome. Well, so much of, I mean, I said in the intro, so much of this movie entered like pop culture lexicon and just like visual iconography. Like I knew the car, I knew the shawl that Louise wears at the beginning. Like there's a lot of like visual signifiers that I knew were Thelma and Louise without ever having seen this movie.
And we love that, like, it's one of the most original selfies, and that was actually the movie poster.
Yes.
My friend Jill and I
And also I knew how it ended.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's a brilliant ending.
My friend Jill and I years ago dressed up as Thelma and Louise for a fancy dress party.
Picture on our socials.
I mean, it's not that interesting. Basically, we just wore double denim and scarves around our necks. And everyone knew what we were at the party. Like, we looked like neither of the women. We didn't do our hair like them. It was just enough that we had, and that we were together. If you caught one of us standing on our own, our outfits made no sense. We were just slightly badly dressed. But I have to say, the double denim is amazing in
there's this There's so film. Much denim. Yeah. There's a lot of denim in this movie and a lot of line dancing.
Yeah,
it's very 90s.
And I think what I really admire about this film is that, like, it's a really hard thing to do, to have such trauma in the film along with such comedy, and like to bring it all together and make it feel coherent and make it often when a movie tries to hit it like a harder subject, like rape or like the abuse that, like, the verbal abuse like Gina Davis getting from her husband and stuff like that. It becomes really odd then when they do moments of comedy or when they change tack. And I think it's a real testament to the skill of Ridley Scott and to Kelly Corey that it actually works. And at no point do you feel like, ooh, that didn't work for me. And like, I have
it's
to say...
It's a fine,
like,
needle to thread. And yeah, there wasn't a single moment that felt off tone or that took me out of this movie. I think it's a perfect movie. I thought it was really, really great.
I love it. I'm so glad we watched it. Thank you, Dave, for watching with me. And you know what? Like, as soon as we sat down to watch it and it was on, Dave was like, almost immediately, I can see why this is a classic. Like, it just has the feel about it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is that, like, you know, to have cars driving through the road and, like, the dust behind them and the sunset and, like, all the visuals of just... It feels like an old... time outlaw classic. Like, he's tapped into that feeling wonderfully, I think. Like, it's a really beautiful movie.
There's rarely does it, and even the fashion doesn't even, besides the denim and bits of that, to your point about it being timeless, nothing really dates this movie. Even besides, you know, there's a couple of moments of like a giant 4:3 TV and things like that, but it feels like it just exists out of time. It feels like it could be right now.
Yeah.
Like, because they're just driving through a desert for a lot of
and
this.
And you can, like, all the characters are very well rounded. Like, I thought anyway that, like, even like the husband Daryl, who's like a complete oaf, I felt like I believed him. And I felt like even like the guy, the would be rapist, like, he was fleshed out very quickly with a few lines from this very well written waitress. Who, when Harvey Keitel shows up and says, like, who do you think did it? She's like, well, have you asked his wife? And, like, immediately we get this picture painted of him being a very horrible man. And, like, the woman's implying that actually it could have been loads of people. And it's such a shame for Thelma and Louise that, like, they nearly could have gotten away with it, except that, like, someone had identified their car as leaving the parking lot. Like, you feel like there's an alternate life for them where... they could have just been on their way.
I know, but
and
it's
like
kind of
happily ever after.
But then the movie wouldn't happen. And
like
the,
when
the
they're
movie,
fantasizing about going to Mexico, you're like, oh, I know you're not going to get there, but I want you to get to Mexico.
That's when you know the movie's working, when you want them to succeed. And the you're right, though, the characterization in this screenplay is just like, for a debut writer, it's just insane. Like, to the nuance, like, to have Louise's character have this past in Texas that's weighing over her decisions to the point where she can't even drive through that state, and yet they managed to make the most direct path.
They managed to make humor out of it. Like, basically, Thelma's like, we cannot get to Mexico from where we are without going through Texas. And, like, that's really funny. But then, at the same time, we know it's really sad because there's a real reason she doesn't want to go there. So, yeah.
But also, they never tell you. The movie's confident enough to never tell you.
Well, Gina Davis does say, like, that this happened to you, didn't it? But Thelma's like, I'm not.
It's implied. Like, it's implied, but I think a weaker script would just call it out and give you a flashback.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm so happy. Like, I'm so happy we watched it. Honestly, it made me, like, it was just, I found it a joy to watch. And I love watching those two women. And I love that last weekend we watched A League of Their Own. So we're on a Gina Davis binge.
Yeah.
So now
she's great.
She's so good.
It does make you think of that Family Guy joke where Stewie and Chris are up late one night and there's silence, and then he says, Chris, whatever happened to Gina Davis?
Well,
she used
to
act in movies, and now she doesn't act in movies.
She had children, and now she has an amazing institute where she educates people on gender differences.
I know it's a very dismissive thing to sort of joke about and laugh at, but from, you know, she did disappear from the public eye for a long time.
She did,
and
but also
and was missed.
Actors also age out. Like, Hollywood favors young people, and particularly Hollywood favors younger women. So it's just an actual fundamental truth that there are very few roles for older women in Hollywood.
She was actually in
Grey's Anatomy she had quite a big role in Grey's Anatomy as a regular guest star for a while. But you know what? She's busy. Like, she's probably got better things to do than shit roles.
No, totally.
Movies.
And I think it's awesome that she, like, made so much of an impact, you know, in front of the camera, and then is like did even more from behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Over so many years. So, like,
she's amazing.
Absolutely incredible.
Right, we need to go because it's really hot, and we're walking around with this poor child in a buggy who's asleep. Yeah. Luckily for him.
So again, thank you all for listening to us 200 times. We absolutely love doing this podcast, and we couldn't do it without anybody listening to us. Well,
you.
We probably would anyway, but it makes it all the more worthwhile. So we absolutely love you guys. We love talking. We actually forged great relationships with so many of you.
So many of you. Like, people have been like, you might not realize, but like the same people like often tweet us and email us and message us, and we like, oh look, we got another email from this person. Like, we're delighted. Like, we think it's so much fun. And we love interacting with everyone. We can't believe people still listen to the podcast after 200 episodes, particularly when we can't go to the cinema. So we are slightly bending the premise of the podcast these days, but everyone's doing that. So in a way, it makes it like more palatable, I think. If we had just suddenly stopped going to the cinema completely for no reason, it would be quite weird. But there's a reason.
So we wanted to say thank you.
Yeah.
And keep in touch with us. You can talk to us at The Cinemile on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. You can email us thecinemile@gmail.com. And we love getting emails, and we always write back to everyone. So a bit delayed lately, sorry. So we're going to continue doing this, and there's another episode awaiting you if you haven't already listened to it, which is James Cameron's Aliens, right now on your podcast feed.
And this is the beauty of podcasts. We haven't recorded it yet, but it's there for you when you hear this.
Shut up.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye.
Okay, then, listen. Let's not get caught. What are you talking about? Let's keep going. What do you mean? Go. You sure? Yeah. Hit it.
Hey!
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Jessie Cruikshank, and I've always been told I have a face for podcasting. So I launched a podcast. It's called Phone a Friend because each week I'll break down the biggest stories in pop culture. But when I have questions, I get to phone a friend. I'll phone a royal watcher to find out why Prince Harry is acting like a real housewife. I'll phone a tween to please explain Euphoria. And maybe I'll even phone a Backstreet Boy to find out if I still have a chance. I don't? Okay. New episodes drop every Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.